Hey everyone, I'm Ben Parker here to tell you that the Stat Sheet Podcast is presented by Box Score Network. Box Score Network is your one-stop shop for all things NFL podcasts. You want game analysis, betting lines, hot takes, or fantasy advice? Well, check out Box Score Network and follow Box Score Network on Twitter at BScore Network for updates. Welcome back, everybody, once again to the Stat Sheet Podcast. We are privileged to have you all on board with us. Simon is in Studio A, Ronan in Studio B, I'm in Studio C. We are locked and loaded with a whole bunch of stuff on franchise tags, free agencies, team reports, the higher-end teams we're going to be looking at tonight, cap space, cap savings, draft picks, team needs, you name it. We are going to be all over it tonight. Let's get right into it. Simon, I'm going to hand it to you first because we actually have a little bit of news that we want to go through. So I'll let you work our way through the news, and then we'll get into the teams themselves, man.
Got it. Yeah, let's do it. Let's start off with the Mike Evans news. Mike Evans, wide receiver, Tampa Bay Buccaneers, was reported, I believe, just this morning. Yeah, this morning, Monday morning, that he is signing a two-year, $52 million contract. It includes $35 million guaranteed. That was reported by Adam Schefter, first place I saw it. We said last week that Evans would likely be tied to telling us what direction the Bucs want to go in, right? So they, especially with Baker, Evans had said when asked about his free agency that he was going to be watching what they were going to do with Baker, and I guess he's seen enough or heard enough, or it was just enough dollars were guaranteed that he wants to finish out his career essentially, you know, with the Buccaneers. So he avoids the tag that keeps it open for somebody like Antoine Winfield Jr., the safety. But Bucks look like they're going to try and run this thing back. Ronan, first thoughts on Mike Evans staying with the Buccaneers?
I was a little bit surprised. I thought that Evans would have tested free agency, right? Because he was probably the biggest name, at least in the wide receiver market, coming into this offseason. So I thought he was going to go test his market and try to run the Buccaneers' pockets a little bit up. But you know what? He's a Tampa Bay guy for life, it seems like. He seems like he's going to be the one-team type of archetype, and that's rare in this league. So you do have to respect it. He's been with them through thick and thin. And you know, they, like you mentioned, they had a pretty good season last year, and he's trying to run it back. So I respect the heck out of, you know, wanting to stick with one team. I'm sure that's something that he takes a lot of pride in. So I like seeing that aspect of it, Simon.
Ben, how about you, man? Mike Evans staying with the Bucs. What were your thoughts?
You know, it's hard to look at a two-year, $52 million contract with 35 guaranteed and say he did the team a favor, but he did the team a favor. Simon, you already mentioned it. This allows them to use the franchise tag on somebody else.
Yeah.
They're already kind of up against it with multiple free agents. This is a team that, while they were decent last year, wasn't competing for a Super Bowl, and they weren't even close, and they're not going to be next year. But this is the guy here who, if he had gone on free agency, like Ronan mentioned, could have easily gotten a four-year deal somewhere in the same yearly cap neighborhood. So he easily could have broke the bank had he gone on to free agency. So there's no question here. He wanted to be here. He wants to finish out here. He's happy here. And I'm fine with that. But he did the team a favor. There's no question about it.
I think I saw something that this puts him in real terms as like the second highest receiver by average annual value. Because guys like Tyreek Evans, Davante Adams, their numbers are a bit inflated with their last year of their contract numbers that they're probably not going to see. But Ben, I love your point. Like he could have gotten at 30 and coming off of a career best touchdown season and over 1,200 yards and 79 catches, he could have gone out and gotten one huge four-year contract. And this gives him, okay, 2 years to maybe continue to compete with Baker. And I think really importantly, if this team finally, you know, if this team in the next 3-4 years pivots to a QB of the future, you keep this guy close enough that you could potentially re-sign him again for, hey, end of your career. Yeah, you're 32, 33, but you're never built on speed, right? It's never been about your route running savvy. It's about your toughness and your hands and everything. And you could just be a guy that can be a reliable target for a young quarterback eventually. So I love this for Tampa Bay. Absolutely. Bit of retirement news. Also, the reported and not reported, I mean, we heard it from the source. Jason Kelce had a very emotional press conference today. Encourage people to go watch that. But center Jason Kelce, Philadelphia Eagles, announces his retirement from the NFL. I mean, man, you just talk about a storybook career, right? I mean, part of undrafted free agent, undersized, under, you know, walk on at college. He talked about when he went to college, like, he was imagining himself like Rudy, like that's how he saw himself. And then this guy is now a first ballot Hall of Famer, Super Bowl winning, one all pro, Pro Bowl, one of the best centers of the last couple decades here. Hats off to Jason Kelce, incredible career. Ben, thoughts on Jason Kelce retiring?
This is my favorite of the two Kelseys by far. Jason is just right up my alley. His style, his way of doing things, his workmanship like effort. I mean, you name it all the way across the board, and then just how darn good he is. So kind of hate to see him go. No surprise here. Everybody basically, quote unquote, knew this was coming. So a lot of us even thought it might happen last year or the year before. He kind of kept on pushing it out for another season or two, but he was done here. Listen, when you look at the Pro Bowls, the All Pros, how durable he's been. Basically, over the past decade, he missed a bunch of games in 2012 and a handful again in 2014. He basically hasn't missed a game since then, for the most part. I mean, he has rung the bell every single time the Eagles have needed him, and they're going to miss him. He has been the anchor to everything they do. Not most of it, all of it. He's the guy that does the pushing up the middle when Jalen Hurts, and listen, Hurts is good at it, but they will not be able to do this anymore without Kelce there at the center. And he's the guy who anchors all of that run game stuff that they do, the fancy stuff. He is the best guy on this offensive line and has been for a very long time. And they're going to have to do things a little bit differently now that he's gone. They will not be able to just plug and play and move forward. It will work differently. He's that good at what he does.
And I misspoke. He was a former sixth round pick, not UDFA, Jason Kelce. Ronan, thoughts on Jason Kelce?
You know, we talk about how great he was on the field and, you know, his physical capabilities, despite, you know, kind of being undersized. But his greatest weapon was his brain. He was one of the smartest. He is one of the smartest offensive linemen, maybe, to come across the game in the past few decades and maybe ever. I think I love that the fact that he's getting the flowers. And that people are kind of seeing him and giving him all the respect, because many times we see offensive linemen kind of ride off into the sunset, and it's kind of like, oh, what a great career, you know, see ya. Yeah, and then you don't get the true send off. And you know, I'm glad that Kelce was able to get this. I think I don't know if I'm gonna get flagged from this, but the speech kind of felt like a Hall of Fame speech, did it not? Going down the
Imagine.
line, it felt a lot like a Hall of Fame speech. So that was one aspect that it was interesting. I mean, completely deserved Hall of Fame career, and he's gonna have that speech. But he went down the line and thanked every. I'm interested to see the difference between that speech and the one in, what is it, 4 years,
Five.
whenever he's inducted first ballot, Simon.
Yeah, imagine what that's going to be. If this is what he just threw together on his phone probably the night before. No, I know he's working on it for a while. Talk about a guy that got better, I think better on the field literally every single year. And I think that speaks to the smarts that you were talking about, Ronan. But also, right, the like his aura, right? Let me use a term like the young people, the aura of Kelce and the Kelce brothers just like continuing as these guys have gotten older. He's someone that's going to be around the NFL. You know, even if for a year he's just at all the Chiefs games and we just get even more camera pans to the Kelce suite, with T Swift and Jay Kelce up there. But I need this guy in a booth in the next 2 years. You guys know I love tracking my play-by-play and color commentary pairings. I need Jason Kelce in a booth ASAP, and that way when Travis retires in a couple years, we can get those guys on. Let's get them on Thursday Night Football. Al Michaels will be done by then, or he's probably already done. But anyways, we won't get into all that. Jason Kelce for NFL commentary. Last bit of news, Russell Wilson. This is more just a follow-up, but it is official now. Russell Wilson, quarterback, no longer of the Denver Broncos, gets officially, I think it was officially released today. If not, the Broncos at least officially announced that he will be released. We are still TBD on the exact designation that he will be released under, whether it's pre-June 1, post-June 1, because that affects the dead cap based on his roster bonus. It's probably going to be post-June 1, and then we have to see. I think if they do post-June 1, it'll get split between the 2 years, his dead cap and all of that. But the moral of the story is the Russell Wilson era in Denver has ended. He is gone before the contract the Broncos gave him even started. He was still finishing out his Seattle contract, and he's gone before then. And I think the $85 million dead cap is the biggest dead cap in NFL history. It is bigger than the combined previous number one and number two biggest dead
Wow,
caps in NFL
really?
history.
Wow.
When he signed it, everybody was pretty much like, okay, 2025 is going to be the target year to see, like, okay, do they move on and eat a $40 million cap hit? Nope. 2024, we don't even make it to 2025, and it is going to be an uphill battle for the Broncos to fill out this roster and this quarterback room, as we highlighted last week, maybe it was 2 weeks ago now, with that cap hit. But Russell Wilson is officially gone out of Denver. Ronan, your thoughts here?
I'm interested to see where or what happens next for him, because he's kind of in that limbo of talented enough to be on a roster, no doubt. But there are definitely some question marks around, whether he's starting material. He's getting up there in age, so he's not necessarily a guy that you want to build a young team around, right? So if you're a team at like Atlanta or even let's say Pittsburgh. You look at Russell Wilson, and there's kind of a 2 to 3 year time frame where you can kind of see him hopefully staying healthy, and then from then on it gets a little bit murky. So he might have to come to terms with a backup role, maybe a 1 year stint like Baker Mayfield kind of did, but it's gonna be tough to find a team that's willing to pay him the type of money that he probably anticipates and thinks he deserves. He's probably a guy that will get signed, I would assume, later on in the off season, probably closer to the start of the regular season, Simon.
Yeah, maybe waits and sees if there's an injury. Obviously, waits till post draft, see who drafts somebody. The thing I'm very interested in, and I think we alluded to this when we talked the Broncos, and it's something that's been much talked about, is what he will sign for. Because, originally everyone was like, oh, he can take the minimum because he's got all this money coming in. And then the big counterpoint to that was like, well, I mean, he's not a minimum quarterback, even as bad as he's playing. He can, he could still go get good backup money, right? 7, 8 million and compete for a starting spot. And then what I learned in the last 2 days was whatever he gets from a new team offsets what the Broncos have to pay him.
Ooh.
But he's taking the minimum, man. He's making Denver pay that entire thing, right? Because he's not getting any more than that, right? Any additional. That's his contract for the season. So yeah, he's taking the minimum, buddy. So every team should be throwing the minimum at Russell Wilson. I mean, come on, like whatever you want to say about, how he might feel off field and the personality in the locker room. If you can get that guy for a minimum, you're telling him who he is in the building. And if he can't get with that, then you sign him for the minimum. You get out quick. Ben, thoughts on Russell Wilson and the Broncos?
The only thing is just that this is what we talked about last week. We talked about the Broncos maybe taking a gap year. If they do the P6-1, it's kind of like 2 gap years because even split up, that's let's just say it's half and half, which it won't be a half and half. Let's say it's half and half. That's over $40 million dead cap hit in each season. That's a brutal, brutal weight to put on any team. Denver too, especially while they're looking for a new quarterback. So it will take them a year or two to get past this financially, but that. That doesn't mean that they can't find their next young quarterback or find their next, competitive quarterback and just move on. Doesn't mean they can't compete. It's just gonna, that's a heavy weight to work through. And we alluded to that last week. That's just kind of what we thought would happen. And I'm fine with them doing it at this point because it just hasn't worked out. And it wasn't going to get better. I mean, Sean Payton, they can all say all the things they want to, and all the teammates can say everything they want to. This was not going to get any better anytime soon.
All right, guys. That's all the news items I have. Anything else news wise or around the NFL that you want to hit before we get into the main portion of the podcast?
No, we're good,
I
not
don't
on my
think
end.
so. I don't think so.
All right. Well, I will just roll in. We are finishing our off-season preview series here. We have our, what is this, 10, 4, 7? Yep, 10 best teams from the NFL season last year to talk about. I am up first with the Dallas Cowboys, so I'll just jump right in. Pending free agents for the Dallas Cowboys: running back Tony Pollard, offensive tackle Tyron Smith, center Tyler Biadasz, corner Stephon Gilmore, safety Jaron Curse, edge rusher Dorrance Armstrong, and defensive tackle Jonathan Hankins. Pollard, running back, obviously not the year that people were hoping, either in the fantasy community or in the NFL community. Tyron Smith, a long time future Hall of Fame left tackle. It was reported over the weekend that he's going to be gone. He and Dallas are not moving forward together. They'll officially be moving Tyler Smith to left tackle full time, probably. And then with the rest of these free agents, new defensive coordinator, right? They have or at least they have a change in defensive coordinator. So how will that impact the defensive roster? With this, with Jaron Curse, the safety, they signed their other two safeties, Malik Hooker and oh, I can't remember the other guy's name off the top of my head. They signed them to contracts last year, I believe. Dorrance Armstrong, rotational edge rusher. Jonathan Hankins is a run stuffing plugger, but he's 32. He was dealing with some injuries last year. They drafted Mazi Smith in the first round last year. The run defense still wasn't very good anyway, so maybe they let him walk. We could see all these defensive players go. We'd see Pollard and Smith go. Tyler Biadasz is obviously a guy I'm watching to see what happens there. It's a pretty good center market in free agency, and he's pretty good. He's gotten better over the years, and he's been pretty durable. But they have paid Zach Martin and Terrence Steele, and they've done pretty well in the draft from the offensive line perspective. So I'll be interested to see if they also want to invest in Biadasz or if they kind of move on from there if he gets priced out potentially. Speaking of the cap situation for the Cowboys, they're $10.6 million over the cap as we talk here on Monday. Some options that they have three big names that are extension eligible right now that would help that number, and that's quarterback Dak Prescott, obviously, offensive lineman Zach Martin, who I mentioned, and wide receiver CeeDee Lamb. All those guys, like I said, eligible for extensions. Micah Parsons is as well, but I doubt his cap number is not going down when he gets his extension. So that's something that'll have to be worked out as well. And that's really all they have until you get into like restructuring some smaller deals, but that's probably not worth it as much. But extensions of these guys would not only allow them from a cap standpoint to help themselves, but also narratively speaking, as they go into the year, it'll answer a lot of questions. Okay, this is still our core. It's still Dak. It's still Zach Martin. Still CeeDee Lamb. These are the guys we're rolling with, not only this year, but for the next 3 to 4 years. And by the way, it can help us make one or two more moves in free agency to help this roster out. Draft capital, it's standard. They're picking at 24, 56, 87. And then they've got, four later picks there. As well, team needs. You could go anywhere here because it's the finishing touches on the roster, really. You could do offensive line anywhere, depending on what you do in free agency, right? If you wanted to keep Tyler Smith at left guard, you could go get yourself a tackle. You could go get a guard if you kick Smith out to tackle. You could go get a center somewhere if you don't bring it back Biadasz. You have a couple corners. I don't think I even mentioned Jordan Lewis, another rotational corner for them. He's a free agent as well, so they'll need to figure out who the long-term corners are. Is Deron Bland really a full-time outside corner, right? They'll have to figure that out. Let's see, other team needs. Oh, and defensive tackle and linebacker position. Those are probably the biggest from a what was wrong with this team in 2023 standpoint, because it still was not a very good run defense. I think they were 16th in the NFL in run defense last year. And then the biggest games where it mattered the most, that was their Achilles heel, right? Remember the Bills game late last season. What this team does, and Mike Zimmer, right, is hired as the defensive coordinator. I don't think we've gotten to mention that. Like, they're going to want to have big dudes up front, and they're going to want to stop the run. So, and the linebacker position has been really, really tough for them over the last couple seasons. So I could see big investment there. And then long term, who's your wide receiver too? Across from CD Lamb, this is a really good wide receiver class. So maybe you can go mid rounds for on a receiver here. So that's a lot, right? Now, obviously, this is a good team. This was one of the best offenses in the NFL last year. Even with Tony Pollard is your only big free agent from the offense, and he wasn't very good last year. So this should still be a very good offense. In terms of the offseason that they're facing, Ben, I'll kick it to you first. What from all of that kind of spoke to you and stood out?
You know, same thing that always stands out about the Cowboys is they're pretty good, but how are they going to get significantly better? Well, somebody's going to have to out-scheme somebody here. I don't necessarily know that this Dallas Cowboys coaching staff is going to do that, thinking about all the other guys they're going up against. They're going to have to out-draft somebody, and they draft fine. You know, they've had some pretty huge hits, but I don't necessarily know that they're going to out-draft. So, well, they need to outsmart everybody on the cap. Well, their cap situation is okay, but it's not great. You know, you're eating up a lot of money here at quarterback, and you're going to have to pay a lot to Micah Parsons. So they kind of feel like they're stuck here. They're not as bad as they used to be. So 10 years ago, it was just mediocrity, right? It was kind of 8-8 every year or scratcher. They're better than that now, but still, what puts them up there with the upper echelon? I don't know that I see the pathway here for them. So that's negative. I know it is, but that's just kind of where I'm always at here with Dallas until further notice.
Yeah, last year it seemed so clear and easy going into the offseason. It was like, go get a wide receiver two, go get a corner two. And they get Brandon Cooks and Stephon Gilmore. And it was like, okay, here we are. And like a lot of that did work out and come to fruition, right? And it just like, what's getting you over the hump? So I definitely agree with that there. Ronan, you hear all this stuff, you think about the Cowboys. What are you thinking their moves for the offseason are? What stands out to you?
You know, I think running back is first and foremost. They tried to address it last year with Pollard. It didn't work out. I don't see them going back to him after the season that he had. And considering all of the free agent running backs that are potentially hitting the market, you've got a number of guys that can step in and make a difference from Saquon to Derrick Henry to I think Eckler, right? I mean, you can go down the list, and there are going to be a couple of guys, it seems like, that are going to be available this offseason. So I think now is the perfect time for Dallas to make a move for one of these running backs, right? They didn't pull the trigger on Bijan. Granted, he went very early, so you'll have that, but or not very early, but you get it. But running back is first and foremost, and then corner, I think, is another kind of interesting situation. Obviously, you have Diggs, but like you mentioned, is Bland a guy that you can kind of count on? There's also a reason why quarterbacks are throwing his way. So I'm interested to see kind of the statistics on that standpoint of it. But you know what? I think if they were to bring in a solid number two, right? And let Bland kind of be that number three, or bring in a solid nickel. I think that they can make that work.
Yeah, I'd be really interested with Bland and his body type and aggressiveness. And I don't know what his background is and all of that, but if he could be a full-time nickel and use that aggressiveness there, I think that would be pretty interesting. Yeah, Cowboys and getting over the hump, two things that just don't seem to go together for sure. All right, let's kick it over to Ronan. You have our next team, the Cleveland Browns. What's going on there in Cleveland?
Yes, sir. So as far as pending free agents go, edge rusher is Za'Darius Smith, who played 55% of the time. He's potentially hitting the market. Looks like he probably will. Taki Taki, the linebacker. Left tackle, Jerron Christian. Linebacker, Anthony Walker. and interior defensive linemen Jordan Elliott and Shelby Harris kind of make up the most notable pending free agents. As far as cap goes, they're currently sitting at around 6.8 million, maybe a little bit less than that. Draft capital, they do not have a first round pick, I believe because of the Deshaun Watson deal. But they have the 54th pick in the draft, the 85th, and then 2 5th round picks, 2 6th round picks, and a 7th. As far as team needs go for this Browns team, obviously their defense was insanely stout last year, one of the best in the league. They're potentially losing a guy like Taki or Anthony Walker, so bringing in some replacements for line at linebacker. Across from JOK would probably be up there in terms of priority. Defensive lineman, as I mentioned, potentially losing two interior defensive linemen, so shoring up that front would also be beneficial. And then wide receiver, I think it is something that they could definitely use. Amari Cooper isn't getting any younger, and getting kind of that second option for you would assume Deshaun Watson to throw to. That's obviously gonna help things out for your offense. They're gonna get Nick Chubb back next year. We'll have to see how they look, or how he'll look, coming off of that gruesome injury. So, maybe a change in philosophy to kind of lessen the load for him. But granted, they were running a two-back system anyway, so we'll have to see how they go about that. It seems like, as far as running backs go, they can pretty much put anyone in there, and they'll at least relatively succeed. But Simon, I'll go ahead and kick it to you. There aren't too many moves that the Browns can make as far as cap moves go, or at least cut-wise. Is there anything that stands out to you that they need to go out and make a move for?
I think they just need to make sure they feel like that second edge rusher spot is secure. So whether that is you liked enough of what you got out of Za'Darius Smith last year, or you feel like who's the other edge rusher they have? Oh man, Twitter's gonna kill me. OG Okoronkwo. If you feel like what he did enough in some rotational snaps, if you can make him more of a bigger piece, or if you go use that second round pick, if there's an edge rusher you really like, making sure that there's someone across from Myles Garrett, because last year was the first year that really happened in his career, and it obviously paid huge dividends to for the first, 7, 8 games of the season. And then when Garrett got banged up midway through the year, and their defense didn't fall off significantly, right? If Garrett had gotten banged up in any other year of his career the way he did this year, the defense would have gone from 20th to last, right? Based on how they had been playing all these years. So the investment they made in the defensive line to complement him was huge going into the season. So they just need to, I think they need to make sure that that stays in place. And then you mentioned it, like, what is Stefanski going to do with this offense? What direction he's going to take this in? What kind of personality is it going to have? They've drafted a bunch of receivers the last couple of years. Whether it's Chubb, whether it's Hunt, whether it's insert random name here, whoever's going to play running back for this team. We saw them go from Jack Conklin to DeJuan Jones last year. So it feels like the offense is going to just kind of keep churning. Stefanski is going to put a above average offense out there basically no matter what. So you need to make sure first and foremost, your defense stays elite by making sure there's another guy across from Myles Garrett running.
I completely agree, Simon. Ben, you can have all of the other pieces moving at no problem whatsoever, but quarterback is a position where if you're even playing slightly below average, your entire season can derail. Deshaun Watson has had a kind of interesting past couple years. We'll leave it at that. Last season was not how he envisioned that going, you would assume, and it was pretty much a letdown. We didn't see a whole lot from Deshaun Watson that you can really hang your hat on. Do you think that Watson is a guy that the Browns can kind of still build around, or they just saw Joe Flacco go and take them, pretty far. Maybe that has something to do with a locker room. Do you think that Watson is a guy that the Browns can continue to try to build around as they continue this, I guess, rebuild?
Yes, but not as much as I thought 2 years ago, and not as much as they thought 2 years ago. I just do not see him returning to his true tracking upward Houston Texans form that he had 3 and 4 years ago. I mean, he was on track to be one of the top three in the NFL, is where he was heading. I don't see him getting there now. Now, can he kind of revitalize a little bit if he gets his focus back, stays healthy? Yeah, he can. He's talented enough to do that. I watched him here in my own backyard for years, so he's got the talent, but I don't see him ever getting up into that top five threshold again. I mean, I just don't really see him getting back to that. So I think the Browns have cursed themselves a little bit, and him too. And I think that's where it sits. I do think he can have a good season, but I don't see him getting back in the top five.
A fully guaranteed contract in any sport and really anything in life is a very risky decision. And at least as of right now, it seems like the Browns' decision to make Deshaun Watson's contract, I believe the first fully guaranteed contract in NFL history, it's not going to go the way that they were hoping, Ben. That does it for me as far as the Browns go. So I think we should go ahead and kick it to you in the city of brotherly love.
Yeah, absolutely. So let's pull up all the Philadelphia Eagles stuff here. Lots of interesting things to talk about. First of all, let's look at their cap space. They actually have $40 million cap space right now. Last I looked, a couple of, about an hour ago, which is quite a bit. You don't really associate the Eagles with cap space. Usually they're over and they're restructuring their way back out of it. But this year, I don't know if they're necessarily changing their ways or they just kind of have hit a little bit of an area here where they're just not having to restructure as much. Anyway, they released Kevin Byard, by the way. So that freed up quite a bit of cap space right there. So the guy that they traded for during the middle of the season, they've actually released him. That created a lot of that cap space right there. For draft picks, they've got number 22, number 50, and 53. So that's quite a trio to play with right there. If you're the Eagles, they continue to usually have pretty good draft picks to work with, and they've got that. They've also got number 97. And then you've got five more picks after that in, rounds 4 through 7. So they've got quite a bit of draft stuff to play with. So they're in a good spot there. Here's their problems. We already mentioned Jason Kelce is retiring. I'm not going to break down all the cap numbers there, but they're going to take a little bit of a hit there, even with him going, because those void years accelerate. They accelerate all back into 1 year. So unless they can finagle something there, they're going to take a little bit of a hit on their cap space there. Fletcher Cox is a free agent. Brandon Graham, defensive end, is a free agent. DeAndre Swift, running back, is a free agent. Wide receiver Olamide Zaccheaus is a free agent. And I'll mention linebacker Shaq Leonard, a free agent as well. So not a long list of guys they need to keep up with, but there's two or three guys there that I'm sure they want back. And again, it's not always quite so easy to just say goodbye to one guy and bring in the next one. It's just not that easy. So they've got guys that they would like to bring back, but they have cap space to match most of that. So they're in a pretty decent shape. It's not bad. It's not great. It's pretty decent. Can they get cap savings? Not really. If they want to trade or release anybody, the dead cap hits associated with almost every single one of those players is so large that they just wouldn't save anything this year unless they turned it into a P6-1 cut. That's really about the only way they would save anything significant. And that's just the way the Eagles do business. That just really is. That's not a surprise. They do it their way. It's messy. It's convoluted. It's complicated, but they win. So I leave them alone. All right. So that's their way. I don't recommend other teams follow it, but they do a good job with it. So that's kind of where they are. Team needs. Depends on how you look at it. I don't think I look at it the way they look at it. But if I'm looking at it, team needs are safety and linebacker. They could also use another younger cornerback. Maybe keep one of the old guys, bring in another one. And then center as well, of course. Listen, they've already got guys in the building that they may try to put in there. They may go looking again at free agency of the draft, depending on how they view the guys in the building. They're not going to find anybody like Kelce. Not next year, not 10 years from now. They're not finding anybody close. So they're going to have to win a different way. And that's fine. All teams do. But again, that's kind of what they're looking at right there. So that's the Eagles in a nutshell. They know what they're doing. Can they turn it into Super Bowl wins? I don't know. But they'll continue to be competitive and win a lot of games. It's just what they do. They really enjoy that. So, Simon, I'm going to kick it to you first. I mentioned several free agents there, and I don't know which one you, if you have that pulled up or not, but which one would you love to see them go after, regardless of what they think? Which one would you like to see them really pull in there?
You know, it's interesting because they're pretty well insulated with a lot of those positions, right? You talk about they've been preparing themselves for these departures for a while between Fletcher Cox and Brandon Graham, and they, you know, went out and did the Hassan Reddick move a couple years ago, and obviously they signed, you know, draft Jordan Davis and Jalen Carter, so they've been preparing for this. And a lot of these guys like just didn't work out, right? They trade for Kevin Byard and then cut him. They trade for Shaq Leonard and he's a free agent. So I don't feel like I need to bring any of these guys back, to be totally honest. You would like, I think, the way last year ended, the dysfunction that there seemed to be within the team. I think you need either, but preferably both, of Fletcher Cox and Brandon Graham from a leadership standpoint. That big four that they've had for like 15 years between Kelce, Lane Johnson, Fletcher Cox, Brandon Graham, those guys have been there through all of the ups and downs of this team for the last decade plus. I don't think you can lose three of those guys in one offseason the way last year ended and things continue to go well. I think you need those guys back, preferably both, because look, I mean, Fletcher Cox got what, 10 mil last year and then all the void years, and Brandon Graham got 5 mil last year and then all the void. Those prices shouldn't go up for those guys, right? So you should be able to get those guys back cheaper, help you out on the void years, rip some of that stuff up. So I think from a contract standpoint and a leadership standpoint, more than an on-field play standpoint, getting the veterans Cox and Graham back in is a must for the Eagles, Ben.
Ronan, on the other side of things, when you're looking at safety and linebacker, the Eagles have kind of purposely not worried about that too much. But they win, but they didn't win last year. So where do you sit on that? Because I know where me and Simon sit on it. We talk about it all the time. Where do you sit on that? Do you like the Eagles being very strict on their analytical approach? Do you think they ought to soften up a little bit?
You know, I understand. If you, I understand the analytical approach. I do because, you know, if the math is telling you, hey, safety and linebacker are areas where you don't necessarily have to dedicate as many resources, and that turns into championships, sure. All right, fine. Give it a try. You do whatever you need to do. Whatever helps you sleep at night. But whenever it's in turn losing you football games, that's whenever it gets a little bit murky and it's like, all right, now you're just kind of getting a little bit set in your ways. So it seems like safety and linebacker were the glaring weaknesses on the field. So go out and get good safeties and linebackers. I think the answer is pretty simple. You know, you don't have to go pay top dollar. You don't have to go give up a ton of resources and capital for, you know, the top of the line Buda Baker or whatever. But go and make a move somewhere. So you don't have to get super set in your ways. I completely agree that safety and linebacker are areas where they need to improve at. And I'm right there with you, Ben, with the corner situation. I think that's something that they need to do, is go and get a good young corner. Honestly, in my eyes, that might be the biggest need for this team. You know, in terms of like a first round pick, go and get the best cornerback on the board for you. Because, man, going out there with, and all due respect to Slay and Bradbury, going out there with slower, older corners is, you're not going to win football games with that method. And you know what? The year before that, they were in the Super Bowl and they were lockdown corners. So I'm sure somewhere in the middle, there's a gray area, but They didn't look good last year. The safeties and linebackers didn't help with that. So you just need to address the defense completely, Ben.
All right, let's move on. Dolphins, Ronan.
Yes, sir. So, pending free agents. Today it was, I guess, announced that interior defensive lineman Christian Wilkins will not be tagged. The Dolphins do not have the money to do so. They're currently $31 million over the cap, $31 million and some change at that. So it is not looking good if you are a Dolphins fan and a Wilkins fan, because it seems like Wilkins is going to be hitting the market. And we just saw a lot of interior defensive linemen get paid just what, a year ago. So Wilkins is about to get a payday, and congratulations to him and whatever team lands him, because they're going to get a good one. Safety, Deshaun Elliott. Edge rusher, Andrew Van Ginkle. Right tackle, Kendall Lamb. Cornerback, Eli Apple. Right guard, Robert Hunt. Cedric Wilson, the wide receiver, and center Connor Williams are all notable free agents that will be hitting, I guess, free agency this offseason, because the Dolphins don't got the money to pick them back up. So they're gonna have to turn to some young guys to replace them, it seems like. And they don't have a ton of capital, at least early in the draft. They have the 21st pick in the draft and the 55th pick. And that does it as far as the top 150 picks in the draft, guys. They have a fifth round pick, 2 sixths, and a seventh. So, late round, maybe you can get a couple value players, but it's an interesting time for the Dolphins. Team needs a little bit murky, because you can pretty much point to anywhere on the offensive line and say, hey, that can be improved. And that's not a good situation to be in whenever you are deep in cap hell. So that's going to be an interesting thing. I don't know whether or not they're going to have to just turn to the youth, right? Because they're losing center Connor Williams and right guard Robert Hunt, so they're losing starters, and then right tackle Kendall Lamb, who played 55% of the time. So it's a murky situation for their offensive line. Interior defensive lineman, obviously, they're losing Wilkins, who was a huge part. They re-signed, oh, it escapes me his name. The other interior defensive lineman that got paid in Miami.
Oh gosh. Oh, Sealer. Sealer.
Yes. So they've got him, but getting a second guy to, you would assume, fill the Wilkins role, because Sealer was playing his own role in that defense. And then secondary replacements, because you're losing guys like Elliott and Apple. Ramsey had the injury kind of problem earlier in the season. You want to obviously have some depth there. So those are kind of my team needs, as vague as they are, pretty much offensive line, defensive line, and secondary. Simon, this is a team that at one point last season were on fire, but then they fizzled out a little bit. Do you think that they can hit that high again next season and in the years to come, or have we seen the best from the Dolphins already?
Wow. I think we've seen the best from the Dolphins in September and October. I think it's gonna be hard to top what they did, but I think they have an opportunity here, and I think Mike McDaniel is a smart enough coach to do it, to pivot into a way that maybe they're not this guns blazing, fast and furious, only high offense for a couple months, and they're maybe a little bit better built to be in the playoffs, right? So obviously you don't have the capital from a really draft or cap standpoint to make full sweeping changes in the trenches, but all of these guys being free agents maybe gives you the opportunity to, like you said, just throw darts on some guys with some different play styles and body types and mentalities, right? I mean, listen, 22 and 54 in this draft, you can get you a starting center and, let's say, a developmental tackle that might, maybe play guard for a year and then kick to tackle for Teron Armstead in a year, right? You could get that done. You go get Jackson Powers Johnson. You could go get Zach Frazier. You could go get Graham Barton, the kid out of Duke, and put those guys at center and fix that position, right? And give yourself some real beef up front. And then with all those late picks, you just take swings on big dudes, right? And dudes that are going to try and free up, let's say on the defensive side, free up your edge rushers and Chubb and Phillips that you've paid money to, and make whatever deficit you have at corner a little bit easier, because you're stopping the run and you're getting a little bit more pressure on the quarterback. So I think, yes, I think to your question, we've seen the last of the record-breaking offense, just because I don't think you can do better than what they did last year. But I think they have an opportunity here to help themselves long term when it comes to postseason runs.
No, okay, Ben, I want to get your take on this because interior trench play is something that a lot of people overlook. Not necessarily GMs, but maybe more so the casual fan. Let's say you're sitting there at 21. Congratulations, Ben. You've just been elected Dolphins general manager. You have the Dolphins roster. And you've got, let's say, a center that you really like and an interior defensive lineman that you really like. Are you swayed one more or one way more so than the other? Or is it more? I'll ask you two questions. For the Dolphins case, would you rather them go center or interior defensive lineman there at 21? And then you, Ben, do you lean more, if both are needs, which one would you lean towards?
That's great stuff. I'm actually going to lean on what everything Simon just said. He mentioned three guys that I like and he likes, so we love the offensive line. We especially love the interior offensive line if it's getting weak. I actually think a lot of GMs around the country actually don't value interior offensive line play for a great amount. The Dolphins haven't. They clearly haven't over the past few years. So, listen, nobody's hammered Chris Greer more than me, but I kind of stopped doing that a year and a half ago because he went out and got all these free agents. And he got McDaniel in, and they started to win a good bit. So I kind of like, hey, leave the guy alone. But now here he is, and he's in cap trouble, and he doesn't seem to have a plan for it. This doesn't seem like something he planned for. This seemed like a year and a half ago, 2 years ago, he was in job saving mode, which he has done. And he's like, well, we'll deal with the rest of it when we get there. Well, now they're here, and they don't know what they're going to do. But when it comes to that offensive line stuff, Simon mentioned that Jackson Powers Johnson, Graham Barton. Zach Frazier, the center from West Virginia. I don't have a preference between guard center. I'm a big believer in strengthen where you can. If you've got the opportunity sitting right there to strengthen, I'm fine with either one, man. Go guard center, you name it. But that's really where I'm at on that. So give it all to me. Yes, the answer is yes. Give me guard and center.
I love it. I love it. That does it for me and the Miami Dolphins. So let's go ahead and stay in the AFC East and talk about some Buffalo Bills, Simon.
Talk about teams that are in cap constraints, man. The Buffalo Bills might have it the worst of any team. We saw this start last year with the exodus they had in free agency, but the pending free agents currently for the Buffalo Bills, everyone sit down, take a little rest. Safety Micah Hyde, edge rushers Leonard Floyd and AJ Epenesa, wide receivers Gabe Davis and Trent Sherfield, linebacker Tyrell Dodson, corner Dane Jackson, safety Taylor Rapp, defensive tackles Jordan Phillips, Tim Settle, and Daquan Jones. Boy, oh boy. Where to begin here? I think the edge question is really interesting, right? You have Greg Rousseau and Von Miller both under contract for this season. Brandon Bean was asked at the combine about Von Miller, and he seemed very positive about he's going to be available and ready to play and good to go for the season. So what do you do there to kind of protect yourself potentially? Because Floyd was active and effective last year. He played more than half of the snaps and he had 10 and a half sacks. The wide receiver position, you just need more from altogether. So you've got your, I think, second and third highest snap count guys, Khalil Shakir mixed in there, but Gabe Davis and Trent Sherfield. So like, what do you do there? Do you bring those guys back because you already have a need there? Or do you say we can do better and replace these guys now? And then the Stephon Diggs question that we get every year, how's that going? And then Tyrell Dotson at linebacker. You know, he played well for a few games there before he got hurt. And this team should have Matt Milano back. And they've made draft investments recently in Terrell Bernard and Dorian Williams, who Bernard especially was good last year, and Williams showed flashes. And then Dane Jackson's been up and down, but there's been so many questions at corner for the last 2 years, and he's arguably been the most consistent out of all those guys. Now, of course, they trade for Rasul Douglas, so that should help them significantly. But what do you do there? I think based on everything, and I'll talk about the cap situation here in a second, they can maybe keep one of Micah Hyde or Leonard Floyd, and then try to attack the other position, right? Whichever, you know, the safety or even just DB in general, or edge rusher early in the draft. But you know, it's gonna be interesting. So here's the cap situation. $41.3 million over the cap. Now that 1.3 mil, we can just go ahead and take that away, sort of, not really by rule of 51, but whatever. Ryan Bates, a little bit of news on Monday afternoon here, was traded to the Bears, which is interesting for a fifth round pick. So I do have to factor that in because the Bills do have a lot of picks. I'll get into that in a minute. Some other moves they can make to try and help themselves. It's been reported already for a while now that running back Nyheim Hines is probably going to get cut. I think that saves them about $4 million. Wide receiver and return man Deonte Hardy, same thing. They're probably also going to move on from Tre'Davious White, the cornerback. That saves them a pretty good amount of money. And then you're talking about restructuring Josh Allen's contract, Dawson Knox potentially. And then Rasul Douglas and Taron Johnson are up for extensions. I think Douglas has a cap hit of 9 mil, and I think Johnson's like 8, something like that. I think those are guys you need to extend and just like lock down, not only for the long term, but also help lower that cap hit a little bit this season. So those are the moves that they can make. Nothing huge from a huge like changing of the roster standpoint, because that's already happening in free agency. Ryan Bates was not a starter for them. He got benched after getting a big contract. Fun note, by the way, that the big contract he got from the Bills, he actually got from the Bears. He signed an offer sheet with them in 2022. I think that was Ryan Poles' first offseason with the team. And then the Bills matched it. So Bates is going to go there and maybe be the starting center for the Chicago Bears and their future quarterback. But getting into the draft situation for the Bills, pretty good situation. 10 picks overall, now 11 with that Bears fifth round pick. 8 of them are on day 3, though, so it's not a ton of high picks. They have 28, 60, and 99 in the top 100, in the top 100 there. And their own third round pick, that 99 is a comp pick, I think. Their own third is going to Green Bay from the Rasul Douglas trade. But still, 10, you know, 11 picks, even if a lot of them are on day 3, like that's a lot of swings when you are probably losing a lot of free agents. Top needs overall, like I said, wide receiver and defense. They found some diamonds in the rough at linebacker, but they need help really everywhere else, right? This defensive line, they've just never figured out. It's so freaking frustrating, man. So, I mean, AJ Epenesa is a tough, good edge rusher, right? But he never popped off the way that you were hoping as a pass rusher. And then, you know, at wide receiver, Khalil Shakir emerged a bit as the year went along. But I don't think he's the guy that you want to be your number two and potentially number one in waiting. So what do you do there? So wide receiver and defense are really the biggest needs. Ben, I'm going to go to you first. You've been talking about this team investing and reinvesting in this aging defense for years. You know, you've got a number of defensive pieces that are going to be free agents, and but then a number of older veterans you're still counting on for this team. How do you see the Bills helping their, or not, maybe not how do you see, what do you, how do you think the Bills should help this defense this offseason?
I think they need to just rinse and wash a little bit here. I think they need to change their methodology a little bit. You mentioned it. I've said it. I won't stay on it for long, but they've continued to invest and reinvest, mostly in the defense, but also in the offensive line. Players, they have a lot of players who are solid that they're paying a lot of money to that are not elite difference makers. And so the net result is what you see here. You're $40 million over the cap with a ton of free agents, all of whom you'd like to keep, but you're only going to keep one or two. And you have a defense that is getting older. So I think, and Brandon Bean's in it, they do a good job of draft and develop. That's their strength, draft and develop, draft and develop. Well, instead, kind of clung on to all these older guys. So I think they need to let go of some of these guys. And you mentioned the draft picks. I think they need to trust themselves more that they can develop these draft picks. They are in the upper probably third of the league. They're not the elite of the elite, but they're in the upper third of the league of being able to take a guy, put him in the system, and use him. They need to trust themselves to do that. So quit clinging on to all these older guys. Let the defense get younger, a little bit faster even. That's what I would do. And so use the draft picks. Let some of these other guys go. That's the direction I would take, whether that's, listen, edge, linebacker, defensive back, you name it, all across that board. Just trust yourself to do what you're already good at instead of clinging on to these guys.
It's going to be really interesting. The way it feels like the draft is shaping up right now, feels like edge rushers are getting pushed down. So you wonder if you can get one of these guys that was early on projected to be a top 15 pick, if they could fall all the way down to 28, and that would be really fun. And it's another deep corner class. You do that at 60. And then whatever you do with Floyd or Hyde, right, that would certainly go a long way in those aspects.
Yeah.
And then, because you'd like to just be able to say, Josh Allen, we're paying you for a reason, make the receivers work, whoever we give you. At the same time, it would be fun to take a guy there at 28, whether it's one of the Texas guys or the Florida State kid, something like that. But yeah, I love that. Ronan, when you look at the Bills, what's just the one thing you want to see answered from them this offseason?
Gosh, that's a good question.
Thank you.
You know, I don't know if it's necessarily something that they have to go out and do. It's more so I want to see edge rusher get solidified, whether that's Von Miller back and healthy, or they go and you know, get a young guy like you mentioned at 28, and kind of develop them there under Miller. Just kind of solidifying that edge rusher, because right now it doesn't seem like they have that cornerstone pass rusher. Ed Oliver is a very solid interior defensive lineman, but getting that edge threat that can get you, you know, 12 plus sacks a season, I think would really put the icing on the cake and really, you know, be a nice counterpiece to Josh Allen in that offense.
Yeah, I mean, great. You know, I mentioned Epenesa. Greg Rousseau is the other guy. He's never had more. He's had 4, 8, and 5 sacks in his 3 seasons each, respectively. All right, so we're getting into the territory now. You know, where it's important to ask these big picture questions. You know, from Eagles down here, because like these are the teams that are supposed to be in Super Bowl contention, right? So it's like, what are these big things, and especially for the Bills, who have just been on the cusp for so long, right? We talked about the Cowboys earlier. I do think it's that edge position that's holding them up. And we've seen them try to address it. They're telling us that it's the biggest issue, right? Drafting Epenesa, drafting Rousseau, trading for Von Miller, signing Leonard Floyd. They're just throwing stuff at the wall. Eventually something's got to stick, but you just hope enough of the other stuff is here in place. All right, that's it on the Buffalo Bills. So Ben, take it to the new kids on the block in this group here, the Houston Texans. Let's get a little positive. What's going on down in Houston?
There's a lot of positive. I know I'm negative sometimes. I have a rep for it. But there is a lot of positive going on here in Houston. I'm going to talk about it because they are basically sitting in the catbird seat. They've already got a head coach that they are in love with, and rightfully so. They've got the best young quarterback in football. You talk about a guy who has already arrived. He's not coming. He has already arrived in C.J. Stroud. So it's going to be a great offseason no matter what, just starting with those two pieces right there. But they've got $70 million in cap space available. That is a boatload. They can do whatever they want to do. If they want to try to keep some of their free agents, I'm about to jump into a pretty lengthy list, they can do that. If they want to get all aggressive and try to, you know, pull a trade, even if the Ravens tag Matabike, if they want to try to get Matabike in the building, they can get aggressive and try. They can go after Brian Burns if they want to. They can do anything they want to because they got the coach quarterback combo. They've got young guys all over the place, and they've got oodles of cap space. Not only that, they've got plenty of draft picks. So you've got number 23 overall, a pretty good first rounder. They've got number 59. They've got number 86. So you've got, you know, good draft picks to work with. Then you've got 2 fourth rounders and 3 seventh rounders, which isn't the greatest, you know, day 3 stuff, but still You've got a handful of things to work with there. So they are sitting in just an absolutely beautiful spot. They really couldn't be in a much better spot unless they had won the Super Bowl last year. That is the only way that they could be in a better spot than they are now. It is just absolutely beautiful. If they want cap savings, they don't need it. But if they wanted it, there's really not much that they have. Just about everybody that they've got who's a big cap number also has a very large dead cap number associated with it. But that's okay. They've already got the 70 mil. One reason, though, this is something I absolutely love. You mentioned that I beat dead horses all the time. I'm not going to do it here. They run a very clean, efficient cap situation. They have restructured almost nobody. You look through their roster, they have almost no restructure money anywhere. Now, a large part of that is because their roster is so young, they haven't really felt pressure to try to keep a lot of these guys. They don't have a large quarterback cap number sitting there, but still, we know other teams who are in the same boat and have messy cap situations. So Houston has done a fantastic job here all the way across the board over the past couple of seasons. The future looks brilliant, not just bright, but absolute bloody brilliant. I mean, they just look, barring an injury and a curse or something, all like Cleveland Browns, everything is looking sunny in Houston. I mean, it just looks fantastic. So that's really what they're sitting in. Let me run off the list of free agents here because these are notable names. They don't have to keep any of these guys, but here's some notable names. So Edgar, Jonathan Greenard, who just did a fantastic job last year, kind of a breakout year for him. I would love to see them bring him back. I expect them to. Linebacker Blake Cashman's good player. We'll see if they can pull him back in. You got tackle George Fant, corner Steven Nelson, running back Devin Singletary, wide receiver Noah Brown, defensive tackle Sheldon Rankins, defensive end Derek Barnett, safety Adrian Amos, tight end Dalton Schultz. That's a long list of names that most of us would recognize. These aren't buried in the dirt names, but they don't have to bring these guys back. They have young people all over the board. They have the ability to replace these guys. I would love to see them bring back Greenard and Noah Brown, the wide receiver for sure, and then pick and choose their way out from there. So team needs depends on who they bring back in free agency, of course, but team needs at the moment, maybe defensive tackle, corner. You can always strengthen the cornerback room. Offensive tackle, again, depending on what they decide to do, and then an edge rusher, again, depending on what they want to do. They're not getting brutal here. It's a young, growing team, so they've got a lot of stuff here. Simon, is there anything negative here in Houston? Anything at all that they need to be worried about, man?
Short answer is no. I mean, it's all good. What I want is, you mentioned a lot of defensive pieces, right? A lot of defensive players that also had the best year of their career under D'Amico Ryans, right? And this new coaching staff that came in. So what I just want to caution, because obviously, D'Amico Ryans and company are listening to this podcast, is don't fall in love with the guys that you just coached up, which is so hard to do as a coach. It's incredibly, you come in, you meet with a guy in February of last year when you get hired, January of last year, and you're like, man, I've got a plan for you. This is the off-season plan, and this is the vision I can see. And they do it, and they work. Grenard, you mentioned him, works his tail off, like is a perfect scheme fit, just like balls out. And you're like, gosh, that was incredible. I want this guy back in the building. And then you pay him $14 million a year and you don't go get a new right tackle, right? Something like that. And it's like, okay, what's actually best for the team right now, right? Because D'Amico, you did your job as the coach. Mike Tomlin says this all the time for this year. You did your job as a coach if you got him paid. You hope it's on your team, but you got him paid. And that's a good thing, right? That's the goal. Great. I always think about like Greg Popovich doing this with Boban Marjanovic, right? Where it was almost like Popovich had to tell him, like, I'm not paying you that much money. You go get it somewhere else. I think he went to the Pistons. Shout out to Detroit. Whereas, okay, what's really important to this team right now? And it's insulating and protecting CJ Stroud and making sure that offense stays on track, because that's what you have to do. D'Amico can do the what he did with Grenard and DeAndre Houston Carson and Blake Cashman, all these guys with other young guys, other cast-offs, other cheap free agents. Offensively speaking, you have to continue to invest there. So whether you go get another big big play wide receiver, right? Whether you go, I mean, I would love for them to rebuild this offensive line, which did fall apart by the end of the year, right? We could see that at the tail end of the season. What does it look like fully healthy, though? You know, we never saw Kenyon Green in his second season. We barely saw Drew Scruggs healthy. We barely saw who's the Notre Dame kid that they also drafted last year, whoever that guy was. Howard, Titus Howard was moving around and injured a bunch last year. I want to see them get healthy again, but I would like to see them also like insulate that offensive line a little bit, whether it's one draft pick or just one good veteran. Don't fall in love and overspend on and make that defense expensive quickly. Continue to coach up some cheaper options while investing in the offense.
Great point. I'm going to hit on that, Ronan. I'm going to come to you in a second here. I got something I'm going to toss out first, but Ronan, if you could name one other team whose future just looks amazingly bright over the next, say, 5 to 10 years, obviously Kansas City, we know that. Obviously Houston, we've been raving about them. But I'll come back to you on that in a second here. Just one other team who's got a great future. Simon, I thought you made an excellent point here, is don't fall in love with all of these guys, because that's a huge mistake. Because some guys scheme up well, and they fall in love with these guys because, again, they work with these guys every single day. I mean, I get it. You make bonds with these people, but this is a business. You're trying to win. You don't win by throwing a lot of money to a guy that you've put in a perfect situation, and he looks great, and he goes somewhere else, and he doesn't look quite so great. So pick one or two of these guys, pay them to come back, and let the rest go. You know, don't try to keep all of these guys. It's a great point, because you could easily use up all your cap space trying to bring these guys back. And not only that, they get more expensive each year. They don't get less expensive because their number goes up each year. It's just the way all the contracts are built for the most part. So it was a great point, Simon, that you made. Totally 100% agreed. Pick one or two, move on from the rest. Ronan, who else's future looks bright over the next few years?
Gosh, you mentioned Kansas City. I think another team that comes to mind are the Bengals. They can kind of escape your mind, even though or after Burrow's injury, but with a healthy Burrow and a healthy Chase, I think that they can win any ball game. Kind of an obscure one, but I think a lot of people are talking about the Packers right now. Jordan Love obviously had a huge season. Very, very, very young team. The sky's kind of the limit for them over there. But nobody matches Houston right now, Ben, because just the level of the improvement of defense they had just in a year time, and without a whole lot of talent on that roster defensively, is just truly impressive. You were talking about them potentially making a move for, a guy like Brian Burns or a Madubuike, right? One of these guys that might get tagged and traded. The one move that I've seen that I'm just falling in love with is them making a move for Legarius Sneed and having Stingley and Legarius Sneed just absolutely lock down opposing wide receivers. I think that would just absolutely put the icing on the cake. Bring back Grenard, maybe go and draft someone on the defensive line to shore that up. I think that would just be absolutely beautiful, Ben.
Yeah, see, moves like that I love. And who knows, I've heard more than one person say Kansas City and Snead may not necessarily stand together, but moves like that I actually love. Because, A, you're not looking at Snead to save the defense. You're bringing him onto a defense that is already showing a lot of promise with a respected guy like D'Amico Ryans that you figure is only going to get better whether he's got Snead or not. So I love that. Plus, you're paying money down on the guy who's 26, I think he's 27 years old. He just turned 27. And you're not paying for a 30-year-old guy. You're also not paying for a guy who's unproven and had a breakout year. You're paying for a guy who has steadily gotten better every single year in Kansas City. So whether the Chiefs keep Snead or whether he goes over to Houston, it's a move I love. And again, the point is Houston's got the flex where they can do anything. They can do whatever they want to do here, and it is a beautiful position to be in. So hats off to Houston and the team down there. All right, the Detroit Lions, America's favorite team. Simon?
The Detroit Lions. All right, here we go. So the Lions pending free agents. It's another long list. Safety Tracy Walker, who they cut this offseason already, as well, and the other safety C.J. Gardner-Johnson. He's a free agent. Corners Emmanuel Mosley and Jerry Jacobs. Interior offensive linemen Vatai, Jonah Jackson, and Graham Glasgow. Both of those last two were their starting guards this season. Wide receivers Josh Reynolds and Donovan Peoples-Jones. DPJ is who they traded for at the trade deadline from the Browns. Tight end Brock Wright and defensive lineman Benito Jones, who are both restricted free agents. So it's more likely than not that they can bring those guys back pretty cheap and easy if they want. Cap situation, $52.5 million under the cap. So they are looking not too shabby as well as Houston. There's not really any other cuts for them to make. You know, Tracy Walker was one. There was an edge rusher that Julian Aguara, I think, was the other one that was kind of the obvious one going into the offseason. Those guys are gone. You don't really need to get into the restructure game either at $52.5 million under the cap. But they do have a lot of young guys coming up for their second contracts that they can extend this offseason, utilizing that cap space to kind of get that done now if they want. Those guys being Penei Sewell and Amon-Ra St. Brown, and potentially Aleem McNeil. So those guys you got to get done. And then the big question, which would also potentially be the big savings move, is what to do with Jared Goff. I think both sides have been very vocal and very clear that they want to get an extension done. That would obviously benefit Detroit with the cap situation, but it would also probably benefit them at least just in the how you know the good news is they still have Ben Johnson around, right? So however long that's going to happen, if you keep him and Goff together, you're probably in good shape. So what happens there? That's another way they create some cap space. But man, at $52.5 million, and with these guys coming up for extensions, it's time to spend money, right? They haven't done that so far. Most of the best players on their team are guys they've drafted. And even in Goff's case, like how'd they get Goff? They traded Stafford, who they drafted, right? So these are a lot of in-house homegrown guys. This is going to be one of the last years they have cap space like this to go make moves. So it's time to go spend money. They've had a couple good, really, really good recent drafts. So it's time to go out in free agency and make a big swing. We'll talk about some of those potential moves in a little bit. Realistically, they could keep both of those guards, Glasgow and Jonah Jackson, and they could sign one or two other pieces and extend your young guys. And that's probably even without doing the Goff deal. So then the Goff deal just could take care of, you know, everything, any extra space you want going into the year. Or you could sit and wait, but it doesn't feel like they're going to do that. We'll come back to Goff in a little bit for both of you guys. Draft capital, this team, I think it's all their own picks, 29, 61, 73, 92, and then three picks outside of the top 150, so pretty standard. Team needs, depending on what they do with the guards, they need a number one corner. You know, Cam Sutton showed last year as the year went on for them why he's such a good CB2. But then the playoff game came against the Bucks, and it showed why he can't be your go-to number one guy. You need another edge rusher opposite of Aiden Hutchinson. That showed, you know, over the course of the 2 years, that as you know, his production kind of waxed and waned throughout the season. And like we talked about with Myles Garrett, you know, one of the earlier teams, like you got to have a guy across from him who's consistent. Maybe you add to your defensive tackle depth. And who is your wide receiver that complements Amon-Ra St. Brown? Do you bring back Donovan Peoples-Jones? Is J-Mo finally going to pop off this year? Is this year for that? Otherwise, you might take a look there too. You know, four picks in the top 100, you can do a lot with. So that's a lot. There's a lot going on there. Rona, I want to start with you on, because I do think how this team gets built this offseason does start in a way with how this team feels about Goff. So what do you think is going to happen? Do you think they're going to give Goff the extension? And then, you know, what's kind of the move off of that decision that you're looking for first?
You know, I you would assume that they would give Goff the extension. They're in such an odd spot, right? Because Goff isn't necessarily a guy that in 6 years you see on the Lions roster still, right? So, but on the flip side of that, he's not old. So that's more so of a, I don't want to say talent sort of deal, but almost a talent sort of deal.
I'll say it's a talent sort of deal.
It's a talent sort of deal. All right, thank you, Simon. Me being a Goff, I'm a Goff sympathizer. But I would say that they're gonna stick with him, and give him the extension, right? Ben Johnson's still there. had let's say Ben Johnson taken a job elsewhere, right? A head coaching job elsewhere. Let's say they lost in the wild card round, or even after. Maybe then they look into moving on from Goff, but picking that late into the first, I don't think them going quarterback is necessarily the way to go. So, I think that there are ways to both extend Goff and not completely tie yourself to him for the foreseeable future. And that might be a little bit tricky, but I think it's possible, and that's the route they should go, Simon.
Ben, same thing for you. How do you feel about Goff? And then what's kind of the first thing you would address after the Goff decision? Or even if you're thinking, hey, they'll just wait till the end of the offseason, what's the first move that's not Goff for them? And then do you think the Goff decision is extension or wait and see?
I don't, man, I just don't think there's any way they're moving on from Goff anytime soon. I feel like man, what's the name of their coach again? I lose these names all the time.
Campbell, Dan Campbell.
You lost it too.
I know you jinxed me.
I jinxed you, man. I'm sorry. It's my fault. Thank you. Not that Dan Campbell. Dan Campbell's the kind of guy who's gonna be loyal. He just is. That's his DNA, and he ain't moving on from Goff. He believes in him. He believes in everybody in the building. Probably still believes in Josh Reynolds too. Okay. He believes in everybody. All right. That's just his DNA. They work together, they sweat together, they cry together, they bite kneecaps together, they do it all together. He's that kind of guy. Goff is going nowhere. I am 100% convinced they are going to hand him a big extension. Now, Roland kind of alluded to it. I think they really need to try to keep that down to a 2 or 3 year deal if they can, so they're not tied to him for 5 years. Because the second Ben Johnson walks out the door, and eventually he will, Jared Goff is not going to be as good. He's just not. He won't be bad. Goff has rarely ever been bad, but Goff will not be the same quarterback when Ben Johnson leaves. And I just don't want to be tied to Goff without Ben Johnson. So I'd love to just keep it down to a 2 or 3 year extension. We'll see how that goes, though. That's not easily done. If I'm Jared Goff and his agent, give me a 5 year deal, please. I'll take that. I don't want a 2 or 3 year deal. What if I get hurt, So that's what. One of the things that got lost though, in that just bedlam of an NFC title game between the Lions and the 49ers, was how bad that Lions defense is, especially at stopping the pass. One of the worst in the NFL all year. It was bad in the playoffs. It was specifically bad against the 49ers during those stretches where they just couldn't stop them, and that really got lost. And so, Simon, you mentioned it already, cornerback. Draft free agent, don't care, but keep working on it. Keep working on that cornerback spot. Keep working on that defensive back spot. Keep working on that. You don't have to be top five in the NFL, but you cannot be down there where they are. That kept popping up all year, and it bit them in the butt in the NFC title game, and really nobody talked about it because we were all over Campbell and his decisions, right? But that was one of the driving forces that really killed them, that they have got to fix this offseason.
Yeah, you wonder if based on how well they've drafted, how many draft picks they've hit over the last couple of years, and then all the free agent money they have this offseason, if this is the year you trade up, right? Last year I wanted them to trade up from what, five or six into like three or four to try to take Anthony Richardson, remember? Maybe is this year, can you pair 73 and 29? And get into the top 15 and go get one of these top two or three corners, right? I think that would be really interesting for them. That does feel like it would really be the final piece because everything else is kind of secondary. I like that a lot. All right, that does it for the Detroit Lions. Oh, and look at that. I'm up next with the Baltimore Ravens here. Bad job by me. I should have flipped that. Anyways, Baltimore Ravens are up. Free agents, talk about another long list of free agents. We've talked about this guy a lot already. Defensive lineman Justin Madubuike, edge rusher Kyle Van Noy, and I wrote the wrong name down. What's the guy's name that used to be on the Texans? No, wait, Jadeveon Clowney. I did that right. Okay, so Justin Madubuike, Jadeveon Clowney, Kyle Van Noy, linebacker Patrick Queen, safety Geno Stone, wide receiver Odell Beckham Jr., and Nelson Aguilar. Interior offensive lineman Kevin Zeitler and John Simpson, both starting guards. Corner, Arthur Millette, Ronald Darby, Rakia Sin, running backs, Gus Edwards, J.K. Dobbins, and whatever 30-plus-year-old castoffs that they had on the roster as well at that position again this year. Matt Ebuka and Queen of that list are the feels like the must to re-sign, right? So you're probably going to franchise tag one of them. Ron, I think you had the note before that that Schefter said Matt Ebuka is probably the tag guy for them. And I feel like they're going to get priced out of Patrick Queen. I think they're going to make the attempt. I could see a tag Matt Ebuka and have a number, a threshold for Queen that you're like, okay, this is as much as we can possibly do. And I'll get into their cap situation here shortly. And I think someone's going to throw a bag at Queen. I think someone's going to see the linebacker market, and this might be Queen's agent, see the linebacker market from last offseason and say, well, we can do that. And it's going to happen because he had a great year last year. You're solid overall at defensive back with Kyle Hamilton as your chess piece, Marlon Humphrey as your CB1, and Marcus Williams as your center fielder. But you probably want to bring one of those defensive backs that I mentioned, right? Back Stone or Arthur Millette as a nickel. I think they have to bring Odell back at receiver, if for nothing else, to take care of those void years and the weird cap stuff going on with him. Although his cap isn't too bad for this year. It's less than $4 million, but I think you have to bring him back with the state of that room. And then all the offensive line, what's going to happen there? You know, Zeitler tailed off as the year went along. It seems like he's done. John Simpson had his ups and downs, which I think this is what marks Simpson's career. And it's good play, but a lot of penalties. And he certainly had that last year. So what happens there? And they got a lot out of Clowney and Van Noy last year. And I wonder if they're going to kind of do the Texans thing and be like, wow, these guys were great. Let's re-sign them to good money. Or if they can look at their room and say, okay, between Ndafe Owe, David Ojabo, Tavius Robinson, who was draft pick last year, and Tyus Bowser, who's free or a veteran with the team, they say, okay, we can replicate that production, right? We can keep this thing rolling and let those guys walk. So there's a lot going on there. Cap situation with all that, $12.5 million under the cap. They can save another 11 to 12 million total if they cut both their starting tackles, which is not usually a thing I recommend. But Ronnie Stanley was just bad, and he hasn't been very good. He hasn't been very healthy or consistent since getting his big contract in 2019. The tougher cut of those two is Morgan Moses over there at right tackle, who's like a million years old, but only suffered like his real first injuries of his career that he couldn't play through this year. Just like, incredible. And he's such a great human, and you just love him. And I hate that he's a Raven. So go ahead and cut him and let him go somewhere else. But they started giving Daniel Fa'alele, a draft pick from a couple years ago, rotation snaps with Moses during the year. So if they feel like he's ready, they can save about $4 to $5 million by cutting Moses and let him walk. And then, like I said, Stanley's just been bad and inconsistent and not healthy. So you can save the other $7 to $8 million by cutting him. So again, I don't normally recommend cutting both of your starting tackles, but, for the cap savings and the play on the field, I think they could probably do it. Draft capital, they've got 30, they've got 62, they've got 93, and then 5 picks outside of the top 130. At team needs, I have tackle because I just think there's no way you can keep Stanley. So even if you keep Morgan Moses, Fa'alele was a project. You've been training him at right tackle. I don't think you put him at left tackle. I know he played a couple snaps for Stanley this year. And then you fill out the defense based on what you do in free agency, and then you add another receiver at some point in here. And that's a lot, you know, tackle, receiver, and, you know, an entire defense to fill out there. There's kind of a lot there. And by the head, I just kind of worked this out because I was texting my Ravens buddy late last night as I was working on this. And Andrew Voorhees, guys, I mentioned earlier, guys that I just love in the draft process go to the Ravens. Voorhees was the guy that tore his ACL doing field work last year. USC guard. He was supposed to be a day two pick. He put up like a million reps at 225 in the bench with his torn ACL last year, and they draft him in the sixth round. He falls because of that. And I'm just, oh my gosh. So he's going to fill in for Zeitler and be an 8-year starter is what I'm trying to say. He's going to be fantastic. It's really annoying. The offensive line I have in my head right now, because I know everyone's curious, is rookie left tackle, Voorhees at left guard, Linderbaum at center, Patrick Mercari, who's kind of their veteran, I play every position. You stick him at right guard, and then Daniel Faalele at right tackle. So that's my fun offensive line thought for the Ravens. But all that said, Ronan, there's a lot going on with this team. Seem obviously, made it further than they've made it before under Lamar. Last year in the postseason, fell short. What do you think is the main, because I said a lot of stuff there that didn't even have to do with Lamar Jackson and how the season ended for him and the coaching staff and all that. What do you think is the main thing for this Ravens team to address this offseason?
I think it's keeping as much of what worked last year intact. And what I mean by that basically is keeping Madubuike and Patrick Queen. I think you're probably right. It's going to be, excuse me, tough to keep both of them, right? But I think that they might be able to figure something out. Queen and Roquan Smith were the best linebacker duo last year, and it was truly a sight to see. So it would almost be a disservice to football to break that up. I don't want to see that broken up. So keeping that intact in any way possible, and then like I said, the Madubuike thing. But one thing that I mentioned it with Dallas earlier. Seeing them go and get one of these veteran running backs to be a true threat in the backfield with Lamar, I think would be absolutely mesmerizing. I mean, sitting here and trying to imagine, well, let's sit here and imagine first a Lamar Jackson and Austin Ekeler backfield, right? Where you can have Ekeler pretty much do anything out of the backfield. All right, now let's think about a read option where they're lined up in pistol, and you've got Derrick Henry coming down full speed ahead, and then oh by the way, Lamar might just tuck it and run, or Saquon Barkley and using him pretty much either way. So I think that running back is something that. The Ravens have kind of addressed, but not truly had a strong hold of for a long time. J.K. Dobbins has obviously dealt with some injuries. So seeing them go out and get one of these premier rushers, I know running back isn't necessarily the super fun pick or where all the money's going, but dang, dude. I mean, we saw whenever push came to shove. The last, what, four teams in the league could run the football effectively. So being able to, have a guy like that in the backfield with Lamar, I think would pay huge dividends both in the rushing and the passing game, Simon.
Yeah, absolutely. Ben, when you look at this team and defensive coordinator Mike McDonald's gone, going to Seattle, they promote from within to keep a little bit of continuity. How do you think that impacts the defense this year? And I'm not asking like what schemes do you think they're going to run? But do you think that for them this can be okay, we can move on from a lot of these guys and kind of rebuild the defense and maybe this guy's image if we so choose? Or do you think this is hey, because they promoted from within, they are just going to try and keep this thing rolling as is and do as, like Ronan said, do whatever they can to keep as many of these guys on defense.
I think they try to, because they're promoted within, I think they try to just keep it rolling. It is a little bit scary. It reminds me of the 49ers last year and their defense when D'Amico Ryan's headed out, Steve Wilks came in. Listen, 49ers had a very good defense this year, but when you look at it almost all the way across the board, the defense was worse versus what it was the year before, and they didn't have Javon Hargrove on the team the year before. So Steve Wilks came in, did a good job, but he didn't quite have that defense humming the way they were the year before, certainly not against the run. And even though the passing game numbers were better, the sacks were down in terms of how high they ranked in the league. And so that defense just wasn't humming. You're going to expect some kind of a drop off whenever you have a defense that was humming. I mean, just absolutely purring like a perfect engine the way McDonald had it there for Baltimore. So if it were me, I would franchise tag Madubuike and I would offer him a really good deal to tempt him to stay. But if he didn't want to, I would have no problem, none, trading him away, getting in a hopefully a pretty good draft pick, and using that cap space somewhere else. I'm not going to tag Patrick Queen. I'm going to make him a decent offer, and then if he gets a Brinks truck backed up in his yard, oh, well, see you later. I mean, that's just the way it's got to be there. Simon, you alluded to it. I think that's exactly what's going to happen. I think they're going to do everything they can to keep Matabike, and I think they will try to keep clean, but I don't think they're going to make a, throw, oodles of money at him to do that. I love Matabike. He's what they need on that defense. But this franchise has won a long time before either of those guys showed up, and they'll keep winning because they're just good at it. They're good at coaching and scheming. They're good at draft and develop. They're good at bringing in free agents when they need to. They're good at all of it. So they'll keep winning no matter what they do. They're just that good. I trust them to do not only the right thing, but I trust them to win no matter what they do. They're going to do it. I liked your idea, Simon, about letting go, maybe not both tackles, but at least one of the tackles, letting go of one of them, probably Stanley. One reason I'm a little bit skittish on Matabike is the same reason I'm skittish on everybody. When you really get serious about huge contracts, you just don't know how they're going to perform, whether injury kicks in or whether it's just a that lack of hunger that is still there. I don't think that's going to be a problem with Matabike, but still, it was for Stanley for whatever reason. So, and then Ronan, I actually like your idea about the running backs. That's pretty cool there too. Having Austin Ekeler in the backfield, working with Lamar Jackson, boy, that would be that's a lot of stuff for defensive coordinators to think about. So anyway, that's a lot of rambling there, but that's where I'm at on that.
All right, last two teams are Super Bowl contenders or Super Bowl participants. Ronan, you've got the San Francisco 49ers. What's going on in the Bay?
Yes, sir. The defending NFC champions, pending free agents go safety Tashawn Gibson. Defensive end Chase Young, defensive lineman Sebastian Joseph Day, and Javon Kinlaw, cornerback Isaiah Oliver, left guard John Feliciano, and defensive end as well Randy Gregory. So a lot of defensive linemen, a lot of depth on that line, potentially heading out the door. Interesting. That is an area that San Francisco has had a lot of resources at, right? They already have Armstead and Nick Bosa, so really it's more about inserting the complementary pieces as much as Chase Young is a complementary piece. he's more so, well, he was originally drafted to be a guy that, build your defensive line around. So it's going to be interesting to see how a guy like Chase Young does in the market, because he whenever he was drafted, there were a lot of expectations for him, and he hasn't necessarily lived up to them. But he also hasn't been a bust. He's been a pretty solid edge rusher, when on the field, and I think in the right situation, you might be able to get a little bit more out of him. Now, that being said, we just saw him on the San Francisco 49ers, and he didn't necessarily flash like a Nick Bosa or anything like that, but he definitely made his presence known, especially there late in the stretch. Aside from the low light reels of him not necessarily giving 100% on certain plays, so it's going to be interesting to see how a guy like him gets attention in free agency, but lots of defensive lineman depth, and just defensive lineman in general heading out the door. Cap status, $285,000 over the cap, right? So they're right there at that threshold of breaking even. So I'm sure with a couple moves here and there, restructures, maybe a cut or two, they'll be able to work something out. Not a ton of cut candidates. Because all the cut candidates are guys who make a lot of plays for them. Trent Williams would free up like 10 million. Debo would free up like 6 million. Armstead would free up like 8 million. Javarius Ward would free up like 9 million. And then Kittle would free up like 7. None of those guys are going to get cut, or at least they shouldn't. They're all playmakers for the defending NFC champions, so you would assume that they're going to stick around. The 49ers have some draft capital. They are pretty much the king of compensatory picks. So those things just keep coming, it seems. They have the 31st pick, the 63rd pick, the 94th pick, the 98th pick, the 125th pick, the 132nd pick. And then they have a fifth rounder, 3 6th rounders, and a seventh rounder. So they're probably going to draft like two or three all pros in the billion picks that they have. Because they're the 49ers, and unfortunately for the entire NFC West and the entire NFC in general, and really the entire league, they are a well-oiled machine, and they consistently put out a good product of football. So they're going to probably have a pretty solid draft with all of those draft picks, four in the top 100. That's a great spot to be in as far as draft capital goes. Team needs, kind of nitpicky here because they are the NFC champions, but their offensive line could definitely use some upgrading in certain spots. Some defensive line depth, obviously, with all these guys heading out the door. Even if you do bring in one or bring back one or two of them, you can still bring in another guy or two. And then I've got down secondary. I think secondary is an area that they could improve at. Excuse me, the offensive or just offense in general, right, offensive line could use some retooling, but quarterback, right, they've got Purdy. Running back, they're fine. And then wide receiver, they don't necessarily need to address. They have Brandon Ayuk, right, who it does not seem like is going to get an extension or anything. So there's been a lot of rumors about him potentially being on the move. That's kind of to be determined. But if Ayuk were to be moved, wide receiver two would definitely be something that the 49ers would look into. And they're at 31 or 63. I think that they could find their guy there. This is an offense that you don't necessarily have to be a top of the line, a Marvin Harrison Jr., right? You can come in and get to work right away and put up some pretty good numbers. We've seen guys like Juwan Jennings go out and make big splash plays for this offense. So, Simon, I'll go ahead and kick it to you. The 49ers, I mean, they were in the Super Bowl, so obviously they're not a bad football team. But if you were to pick one weakness that they really need to drive home and address this offseason, what would it be and why?
Yeah, for me, and this will all kind of stem from, they hired from within for their defensive coordinator position after firing Steve Wilks. But the run game had a lot of issues last year, right? So how do you address that? And do you do that with a defensive tackle pick, right? We saw them pick up Sebastian Joseph Day during the season. Javale Kinlaw never really worked out since they traded DeForest Buckner. It's felt like there's been a hole there that they haven't quite filled. So what do you do there? And then with Dre Greenlaw and his Achilles injury, what's your second linebacker situation like? And he is a very good run stopper. So I think the middle of that front seven, defensive tackle, linebacker, that's what I'm interested to see how they address. And there's some interior defensive linemen on not only the free agent market for big money. Again, can they do that a second year in a row? But there's some in the draft in the first round that would be interesting. So I want to see what they do in the middle of that front seven, Ronan.
Ben, now obviously reigning NFC champions. The NFC isn't necessarily as competitive as the AFC. Now, I say that, and you compare the win-loss records of each teams in the AFC and the NFC, and they pretty much match up. But it seems pretty clear that the AFC has a little bit more firepower, kind of the more premier quarterbacks. So the NFC is a little bit open. So do you see the 49ers, staying as this powerhouse, maybe not the powerhouse, but a powerhouse in the NFC for the years to come? Or can you maybe forecast a little bit of a decline, with Shanahan's offense potentially getting figured out? Some have opinions on Brock Purdy and whether he's dynamic enough to, keep defenses on their toes for years to come. I mean, they've got the roster right now to compete, next year and years coming. But do you see maybe defenses and just teams in general kind of stopping the 49ers?
No, I think the 49ers are a powerhouse to stay for as long as Kyle Shanahan is there. He along with, Andy Reid, Sean McVay, they're among the best schemers in football. I mean, hands down, just all day long, putting the team together, getting them ready for game day, and then drawing up the plays. I mean, they're the best in the business. They're not going to quit being that. They're going to continue to be amazing. So, I'm with you guys on the team needs too. Defensive tackle, I would love to see them upgrade there. Offensive line, I would love to see it there. Somewhere in the secondary, I would love to see them upgrade there. And then I'd love to see them add another. I would love to see them just let Brandon Ayuk go, however they do it, and then add a wide receiver in the draft because there are a lot of guys here. And Ronan, you mentioned that there's a lot of guys that can play in San Francisco. Man, I'd love to see Roman Wilson, the explosive guy out of Michigan, maybe in the second or third round, go to the 49ers. Xavier Leggett from South Carolina. I would love to see him. Ricky Pearsall, the kid from Florida. I would love to see him with the 49ers. Even all the way down to the fifth round, Jacob Cowan, Ananias Smith from Arizona, Texas A&M. These are all players who would fit this kind of, crossing, meshing, cutting, slashing stuff that the 49ers love to do and just keep adding to that. I would love to see it. So they're in a good spot. They're not going anywhere. They're going to keep winning and winning a lot. But they still have needs.
Agreed, Ben. That does it for me and the San Francisco 49ers. So let's go ahead and kick it to the Super Bowl champion, Kansas City Chiefs, Simon.
Oh, we're gonna kick it to Ben for this one, Ronan. Come on now. What are
Oh,
you?
jeez.
Jeez, what are you?
Jeez.
Oh, pulling a Ronan
Oh,
right in the tail
no.
stretch of the podcast.
Oh.
Come on, Ben.
You know,
Can you
I
tell
had a
us?
five team gap. Head just got up in the clouds.
Gosh, Ben, can you save us here? Can you bring us home? What's going on with the Chiefs?
Yeah, let's go to Kansas City where the sun is always shining because they have Andy Reid, they have Patrick Mahomes, they have two Super Bowl wins in a row, and
Pretty
they're
good.
talking about a third. So they're going to be fine no matter what they do. Let's start with their cap space. So they don't have a lot. They're at $9.6 million last I checked. So they already released Marquez Valdes-Scantling. I think that saved them about 12 million-ish. There was no doubt that that was going to happen. And then they've already franchise tagged the guy that we mentioned, L'Jarius Sneed. So after those two moves combined, they're sitting around $9.5, $10 million, depending on where you want to look and how you want to account for it. So they don't have much to work with from a cap space situation, but they're in good shape. They don't restructure a lot. They restructure when they need to. So they run a good, clean, efficient setup there. They don't mind restructuring, but they're just not going to do it a lot. Most of that's going to come through. This is what I like best about the Chiefs. When they restructure, it's going to come through two or three guys. So that's probably Patrick Mahomes, Joe Tooney, and there's one other guy who I can't even mention. It's not worth mentioning. But two or three guys. They're not going to restructure 10 or 12 and be tied to 10 or 12 guys. It's two or three that they know they're going to keep, and they only do that when they really feel the need. So that's a really intelligent way to go about it, and I like that. But they have a little bit of cap space, not a lot. Draft picks, they're in a pretty good spot there. They got number 32, 64, and 95. That's your standard draft picks right there. And then they've got three draft picks in the hundreds as well. So they've got their draft picks to work with. If they wanted to pick up any cap savings at all, they could do it with Justin Reed, save about $10.7 million. He's a decent safety. He really is not a standout or a difference maker. There are times where he makes plays and other times where he is just and not able to make plays. So he's decent back there. He's been good for them the past couple of years. But if they want to move some money around, $10.7 million by letting him go. And then Charles Omenihu also, who's a good edger, but he's more of the rotational type. They could save $7 million by letting him go. That really is their only two significant cap savings if they want to. Got a lot of free agents here, so let's work our way through them. We mentioned Marquez Valdes-Scantling, who will not be coming back. Mecole Hardman, who caught the Super Bowl winning touchdown. I don't think he'll be back. He'll latch on with a new team and catch a 2 or 3 year deal, hopefully for him. Defensive end Michael Dana, defensive tackle Chris Jones. We already mentioned L'Jarius Sneed, the cornerback, defensive tackle Derek Nnadi, linebacker Drew Tranquill, who was fantastic this year and got almost no attention for it. He really was, in some ways, the backbone of the middle part of that defense this year, especially when the injuries started to hit the other linebackers. He was fantastic. Left tackle Donovan Smith really did not have a good season. I don't expect him to be back. Punter Tommy Townsend, who everybody knows and who I think everybody would expect to come back, but they have just recently signed Matt Araiza from San Diego
Nope.
State, who was drafted a year or two ago, who was nicknamed the punt god during his final season at San Diego State with the Aztecs, and then got into some rather significant legal trouble that he now appears to be free of. So this seems like a forerunner. I'm sure they're trying him out right now as we speak to maybe letting Tommy Townsend go. Now, I don't really know why they would do that. Townsend has been fine, but you're not going to save a lot of money at punter here necessarily. But this is a move that they are looking at, and Areza is a guy who at least potentially could give you an advantage if he lives up to what we saw his final year in college. Linebacker Willie Gay, who's a good linebacker, but is probably just not going to be coming back because I think they've already got other guys they can work with there, and the money's probably just going to run out before they get to him. So that's a lot of stuff there. There's a lot to look at there. Ronan, we know the Chiefs are in a great spot, but what's your first thoughts here when you listen to all the stuff that I just rattled off?
I think they're going to be just fine. Because, Ben, halfway or midway through this year, we were sitting there talking about what was wrong, with Kansas City and, how their receivers couldn't catch a cold and this and that. And then they went and won the Super Bowl. I think as long as you've got Patrick Mahomes, you can pretty much go out there and do just about anything. Paired with Travis Kelce and Andy Reid, that trio is not to be trifled with. I short and sweet, pretty simple. Kansas City is not going to go anywhere anytime soon. I would love to see them bring back Legarius Sneed. It doesn't seem likely. It seems like a tag and trade situation. But he's a guy that I think came up huge for that defense. And I'd love to see them maybe go and get the Texas receiver who or not the Texas receiver. Yeah, no, the Texas receiver who is like 6'4" and can fly.
AD.
Donai, yeah, AD Mitchell, right? So seeing a guy like him go to Patrick Mahomes would just be absolutely hysterical. So I think going and maybe getting another young receiver to pair with Rashee Rice, who I think still has potential to be something there in Kansas City, but just adding some depth into the receiver room would be awesome.
Agreed. Simon, I'm coming to you with a specific question, but you can go off of that and go any direction you want as we close out and talk about the Chiefs here. But left tackle, they've been ever since Mitchell Schwartz, who was a stone cold stunner of a right tackle, and Eric Fisher, who never lived up to his full potential, but was just a rock solid left tackle for years and years. They let them both go in one offseason, paid the price for it the following year, but they continued to win two Super Bowls since then. So tackle has been unsettled for them. They're paying a lot of money to Juwan Taylor over at right tackle. He didn't do great last year. But let's talk left tackle for just a second. I'm convinced they're not bringing back Donovan Smith. They know how to scheme without a tackle. They've done it for three seasons now. They know how to scheme around it. But if you were advising them what to do at left tackle, do you like tackles in the draft good enough where they're going to be drafting to pull one out there? Do you like any tackle in free agency enough to go after one there and add to what you're already spending on the O-line? Or you just suck it up, Buttercup, plug a guy in and stick a tight end over there and be done with it because you got Mahomes and Reed. I mean, what would really be your advice here to Kansas City for the next season?
So my early read of the tackle class is very high potential when you get to the back half of round one into round two at tackle, but more developmental guys, Tyler Guyton, there's a BYU kid, there's a Princeton kid, I think. I mean, not Princeton, who's the other one?
Yale, there's a
Anyways,
Yale
whoever it is,
kid. Yeah.
back half of round one, you're more going to find developmental tackles that have high potential, right? And that's great, but you're in win now mode every single year with the Kansas City Chiefs. There are two tackles I like in free agency. One is Tyron Smith, who I talked about earlier. I would love for the Chiefs to throw him
Yeah.
$8 million for the year. Can they give him the Donovan Smith deal from this year? Oh no, he got way less than that. Can they throw Smith $8 to $10 million in for 1 year to be completely solid left tackle and not have to worry about it. I think that would be really fun. The safer option because of the injury standpoint, I still like Jonah Williams from Cincinnati. I feel like he had one bad game on national TV 2 years ago, and everyone thought he was horrible after that. And he gets moved to the right side because they go get Orlando Brown. I think he's fine. I think he's completely fine. I think he's better than Donovan Smith was this past season. I think you could put him on the left side and give him a 2 year deal at a pretty modest price and get completely average play. Those are the two free agents I like. And if you go the Tyron Smith route, you have Wanya Morris, who you drafted in the third round last year. You would hope that that guy could give you something if he needed to play at some point next year. But to start the year with Tyron Smith, that would be my number one go-to for them.
Yeah, I like it. Real quick, because this is fun for me right here. You mentioned the draft. You mentioned Tyler Guyton, and you may not be this deep into your draft research yet, because we're still kind of early on with that. But can Guyton play left tackle at the NFL level? And if so, even if he has a rough 2024 year, because you kind of expect that. Do you think he's good enough to where the Chiefs can just plug him in for the next 5 seasons and roll with it, considering that they can scheme tight end around that?
I think if you end up with Guyton, what you're probably doing, and if the idea is we got to plug this guy into the starting lineup, you're putting him in at right tackle and you're moving Juwan Taylor to the left side where you originally signed him for. And then that opens a whole nother Pandora's box of Taylor getting used to left tackle again, are coming off of a shaky year and throwing in Guyton, who's a developmental guy at right tackle. I think you could do it, and I think you'd probably net out with the same level of play you got this year from Taylor on the right side and Smith on the left side. And then I think you're in a better situation long term because I do think Guyton is going to be a good long term tackle again from my early read so far.
All right, fair enough. I like all of it. Real quick, I didn't mention Chiefs team needs. They can always use an edge rusher. They let two or three of them go about 4 years ago, and they haven't had a great one since, but they're winning anyway. I mentioned tackle, and then y'all already mentioned wide receiver, of course. So they could really use a couple of wide receivers just to unlock Patrick Mahomes' full potential, both downfield and yardage wise. All right, that's all I got on the Chiefs. Simon, back to you, man.
All right, guys, that is everything on our off-season preview. Now, we're going to spend a couple minutes here just laying some stuff out for our listeners. So, if you're a first-time listener, welcome. If you're a long-time day one listener, thank you all so much. This is the last episode of the Stat Sheet podcast, formerly known as the Phantom Football podcast. Ben, Ron, and I just lots of stuff going on, and I think everything kind of stems for us from man, Monday nights waiting until Monday Night Football ends to hop on a podcast and set up our week that way is tough, but that's a lot of mishmash that you guys don't really care about. So last episode of the Stat Sheet podcast is tonight. Logistically speaking, the first thing I want to do, we'll all kind of give everybody a chance to hear what else we got going on and where else you can find all of us, because you will find us all together again on plenty of other platforms. But what we wanted to do in these three episodes was set up the off season for you, and then you can listen to us in other places, react to plenty of everything that's happening in the off season. Tons of draft stuff. If you liked our draft War Room series from last year, go to the Simon Shore podcast feed. Go hit subscribe to that because we are going to be doing that. Me, Ronan, and Ben, sometimes all together, sometimes in pieces, and then doing mock drafts and stuff. So all of our draft content we'll have, it'll just be on that feed. And we'll have plenty of other stuff in plenty of other places. So that's all logistics stuff. Make sure you're following each of us on Twitter. We'll put it in the episode description one more time for everybody. That way you can keep up with everything that we do. But I just want to first start off. Or finish things out, I guess, by saying I've loved doing this podcast. Everybody that has listened to even 5 minutes of us ramble on about offensive linemen and random coaching decisions and ridiculous cap conspiracy theories, thank you from the bottom of I'll speak for all of us for a second, all of our hearts. To Ben and Ronan, I mentioned the late nights, man. I so appreciate the work you guys put in and doing this podcast with you. I started doing these podcasts in the COVID pandemic, just like 90% of American white men in their late 20s to mid 30s. And I lucked into finding two guys that I just genuinely enjoyed turning on Zoom at midnight on Monday nights and saying, let's talk about football, because that's all anybody wants to do right now. And I just really I appreciate everything that you guys put in, and I had a ton of fun doing it for 2 seasons. I'm very excited for all the very fun stuff that we have planned and you guys have planned independently as well moving forward. But I'll open, Ben, I'll throw it to you first, to say whatever you want to say. But again, I just want to say thank you to the listeners and thank you to you guys big time.
I would be sad, but it doesn't feel like goodbye. It feels like we're transitioning because, Simon, you mentioned that not all the content, but a healthy part of the content that we do here is rolling over to your show and kind of going to morph into a lot of the things that you already do. And so we're going to be talking on that show. And then both of you, I've got standing invites. I know the time may not work out to come on my show that we'll be doing on Tuesday nights as well. So we are going to keep working on a lot of things. We're transitioning here. So I wouldn't be sad, but it doesn't feel like goodbye. It just feels like we're reworking everything here. So we're going to keep working on everything together in different ways. But I do want to thank everybody for listening because it's fun to do it. It's fun to talk football. But if nobody is listening, we wouldn't be doing it. So we appreciate everybody who does listen, no matter who you are or where you are or how often you listen. It does mean a lot to us because, again, hey, first of all, it feeds my male ego to begin with. But second of all, again, if nobody's listening, does the tree that falls in the forest make a sound if nobody's around to hear it? Well, we'll never know. So anyway, thank you everybody for listening. And then both of you, again, thank you for showing up. I have worked with a lot of people. We all have. I've worked with a lot of people over my lifetime who are flakes. There's just no other word for it. They don't show up. They show up when they feel like it, and you guys don't do that. So y'all show up every friggin' week, and we roll for 2 or 3 hours. Sometimes it's 3 hours that we invest just into the recording, not to mention all the prep time. And Simon, especially on your side, because you're doing all the production work too. So Simon sends out a doc every week. It's loaded every week. He's the one who does any editing. He's the one who puts up the music, the commercials, all of that. So Simon, that's a ton of extra work that me and Ronan don't even do, that I appreciate you doing. But anyway, I do appreciate both of you showing up every week because it means a lot. We've all worked with flaky people who let everything else get in the way and don't do what they say. So I appreciate both of that from both of you.
Ronan, how you feel, man?
I think Ben put it perfectly. It doesn't feel like goodbye because we're all gonna we're us three are gonna be on a podcast. I probably here in the near future. So it's just it's a retool. Like you guys mentioned, thank you to everybody who's taken their time out to listen, and thank you to you both. I started out on this as an intern, just trying to kind of fill a credit and trying to get through college, and doing this with you guys has opened my eyes completely. To seeing the game and everything outside and that revolves around it in a different light. And that's something that I'm here in my early 20s, so that's huge, to be able to take this information and this experience and be able to apply it for years in the future, because this has been great for me and my experience, as hopefully getting into this sports media world. And it's been a blast while doing it. Like you guys mentioned, hopping on here at kind of crazy times on Monday nights isn't necessarily the ideal thing, but we were all happy to hop on here and do it. And I think that's a testament to how much fun we had and the chemistry and just how great it is of the world of sports, right? Because that's what we're all here for, right? We're all here because we love the world of sports, right? It's one thing to like a sport, but it's another thing to immerse yourself into the world of it, and to follow the intricacies and the cuts and who's potentially going there and who schematically fits. And this is our niche, and I'm glad to find like-minded people, because it can get lonely out there. It can get lonely, so surrounding yourself with like-minded people who love sports just as much as you is pretty awesome.
When it came time to for the inception of this podcast to happen back in the Phantom Sports Industries days. You talk about being lonely, right? I remember moving to Albuquerque, New Mexico from the East Coast in COVID and figuring out what the heck I was going to do, how I was going to find people to want to talk to, right? And I remember it being like 6 a.m. sitting at a front desk of the YMCA watching Ben's YouTube videos, being like, this guy's kind of fun. He wears a suit. He's got like these whiteboards all around him. What's going on? And I like the stuff he's saying. And then reading Ronan's, you talk about Ronan, you being an intern. Everybody, Ronan is the Guppy of this podcast. That's why we pick on him the most. Literally, like, has to get up and go to class the next day. He's the one that's going to get a, degree and actually have a real job in all of this. And r reading one of Ronan's first posts for Phantom Sports, predicting where every quarterback is going to go, and just finding these two and saying, okay, if I'm gonna, I have the other podcasts, and we'll again, before we leave, we'll talk about what we're doing. But if I'm gonna find your weekly NFL style podcast, like these are the guys. And I think all of our different experiences, and again, the different ages and points of life we're at and points of NFL fandom we're at, made it a lot of fun. And we still manage, even with the different backgrounds, to, I think, make it about the game itself first and foremost, and that I'm really appreciative of it. And that was our goal from the onset, and I think we definitely did that. Ben, you mentioned your YouTube show, your Tuesday show. Can you tell the listeners about that? I think everyone that listens to this knows about Odds On Favorite, but do another plug for that. But tell everybody about your YouTube show and what's going on the channel.
Brand new show will have probably anywhere from one to six guests on a week. It'll be a 30-minute show. Everybody gets 1 minute to talk about every topic, so it's going to move fast. You have to say the important thing first. It will be NFL focused, but we're going to cover everything that we feel like, from the random best cake in the world to best fast food in the world to who's going to win the NCAA women's tournament. I mean, you name it, we're going to try to introduce some fun games. It will be quick and fast. We're recorded at 8 p.m. on Tuesday nights, but it will be out by, say, midnight on Tuesday nights after I've done my other recordings on my other podcast as well. So late, late, late Tuesday nights, look for it, certainly by early Wednesday mornings. It's going to be a lot of fun. It will not stay the same. I guarantee from 1 week to the next, it will be different. It will never be the same. And what you see for the first episode will not be what you see by week 10. It is going to change just about every week if I can help it. So, we'll be on the borderline of chaos. We'll kind of embrace the suck, and we are going to enjoy it, man. We're going to have some fun with it. So I am worried though, man. I've got the Super Bowl 10 on, and the Steelers just missed a field goal right before the half, and they're down 10-7, Simon. I mean, are they going to pull this thing out? I don't know.
I think they'll be all right, Ben. I think they'll figure that one out. Ronan, do you have anything ironed out yet?
Nothing super set in stone, but the Iron Grid podcast will be up and running at some point. I'm trying to get that figured out with my roommate slash peer. Just trying to figure out a time where we're not completely swamped. I currently write for the Murray State News, right? I go to Murray State University, so it's spring season, right? So softball, all the good stuff. Basketball season just ended. A little sidebar, because this is just our last thing to get anything out. Everybody out there, go look up Caitlin Young from Murray State University. She's
All right.
scored 2,000 points as or in her 4 years at Murray State. She's about to get her 1,000th rebound here in coming up. She might go. I think she's got a COVID year, so she might go transfer to a school like Indiana, or she might go to the WNBA. But keep an eye out on her. If you pay attention to the WNBA, she is an absolute phenom. She's gonna hopefully at least be in contention for the Becky Hammon Mid-Major Player of the Year. An absolute. She's like one of the best to ever wear blue and gold at Murray State, and that's with John Morant there. So just putting that out there, man, because I've gotten the privilege to watch her for the past couple of years, and women's basketball is just now starting to kind of get the recognition that it deserves. So I mean, now's the time. Go pay attention to it. Go be a fan.
I absolutely love that plug there at the end. Yeah, make sure, like I said, Ronan's gonna get a real job in all of this at some point. So make sure you get in on it now and go ahead and start following him and get it all figured out. Where you can continue to hear the three of us all together. So if you listen to this podcast, you probably listen to the Simon Shore podcast, not to have a big head about it or anything, but you've probably checked it out at least. The Simon Shore podcast is going to be continuing on. We've taken a bit of a break just so we could finish this thing out. It will be morphing a little bit. Title TBD, but it's still going to be the same premise. But Ben and Rona are going to be on a ton, especially here through draft season. I'm pretty much going to have at least one of them on every episode moving forward until the NFL draft happens. And after that, you can hear both of those guys probably essentially monthly moving forward on the Simon Short podcast, covering what will be 90% now NFL. Through about 2 years of the pod, it's been 50% NFL, 50% other stuff. It's going to be almost all NFL at this point moving forward. And Ben and Ronan are going to be on a ton for that. So if you like this show, make sure you're checking out everything that we're continuing to do. We're going to have a lot of the same style stuff. We're going to have a lot of new and fun stuff as well. But yeah, I think just to end it out, we just really appreciate everybody that's listened, and I think we've all expressed our gross and disgusting love for each other as well. So really appreciate that. While I kick it back to you guys for if there is anything else you guys want to say, I'm gonna do a shot for the podcast here. I just happened to have this sit next to me, so I'm gonna do that.
Well, I mean, hold on, wait a second, because
Oh
I
no.
might.
Oh no. Fantastic. Ronan's gone. I don't know what he's getting.
It's not as good as your crown, but it'll
Yeah, I know.
do.
Just, get it laying around. What is that?
$12 vodka, man. I'm in college. Oh my God. That's miserable. Oh. That's like the opposite of a plug.
Was
Yeah,
that an unplug? Was that an unplug?
that was whew, if you like hand sanitizer, go
That was both the best moment of the 2 years, and
yourself.
also the saddest moment that we just thought of the unplug segment of things that we're not recommending. So we're gonna steal that and use that for the future.
Definitely have to.
All right, I'm gonna release that video clip on Twitter. Well, actually, maybe not you. I don't know if I should do that. Anyways, doesn't matter.
You know what? I'm of age, so it's not like it's
Yeah,
gonna
you're
get
fine.
some.
That's right.
Yeah,
That's
it's
right.
all good. It's all good. Legal disclaimer. I'm of age, so there we go. We put the disclaimer. We're good. Don't drink, kids.
You guys remember the week where Ronan turned 21 the day of recording, and he told us like
That
6 months in advance he just wasn't gonna be there? That was good stuff.
I had
And then
to.
we
Hey,
didn't hear
listen.
from Ronan for 2 weeks, and he got lost in Vegas, I'm pretty sure.
Whew.
Great times. All right. Well, that was fun, everybody. Thank you all for indulging us in that. Anything else for anybody? Ben, do you want to literally drink some hand sanitizer over there?
I don't think I have it. I just love
Do
you
you
guys so
Oh
much.
gosh. Oh no.
Can't wait to
Oh
see
no.
you 2 days from now.
Oh no. Yeah,
Yeah,
exactly. We're actually gonna go record something else right now. So thank you all for listening. All right.
I
We're out of here for the final time. Thank you all for listening so much to the Stat Sheet podcast. Go ahead and follow the pod, I guess, if you want. We'll use that account for something. But otherwise, follow us on Twitter. That'll be in the episode description. Thank you all so much for a great run, and we will hopefully be talking to you soon. Have a good one.